Good evening, everyone, and welcome. This is the Gem Haderech Shir HaShirim 5 Megillus Shir set. And you join us tonight at number 3 of 6 in the first term. And we got to, last time, the Pasuk where we were talking about Hashem kissing me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. And that's chapter 1, verse 2, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Beis. And we were saying that the kisses of God's mouth specifically alludes to the way that Hashem interfaced with us at Har Sinai. It was at Har Sinai that he kissed us with the kisses of his mouth. Now, mouth to mouth was only Moshe Rabbeinu, but the kisses of his mouth, all Klal Yisrael that were there, heard Hashem speak to them, and that was the greatest revelation that people have had of God en masse to date. All the souls of the future Jews were also there, and we have a tradition that souls of Gentile converts were there as well. But the bodies of approximately 15 million people, both Jews and members of the Erev Rav, were actually present for this incredible revelation. And that whole episode was a highlight point if you're coming from the content of God closeness. Remember, Shir HaShirim, more than anything else, is a beautiful dialogue, a prophetic song where you see the overarching principles of the universe all laid bare. That's what a song is, specifically detailing the closeness that Hashem has with Klal Yisrael, and vice versa, the level of closeness that Klal Yisrael have with Hashem vis-a-vis what the other nations have. Which is why the Gemara in Shabbos says Har Sinai is congate with Har Sina, literally Mount Hatred. The source says that Al Shachkodesh of all anti-Semitism is really rooted on the fact that Jews have a monopoly of closeness to the Bara Olam. We have a particular level of closeness with him, which is, you can't copy it. It's completely unique. And the Gentile nations, despite the fact that they don't want such a relationship with him, they don't. They've openly rejected that, and they wouldn't want a lifestyle that matches that, but they still hate the fact that we have it. And this really is what Shir HaShirim is about. Remember, Shlomo being the son who rises up against those who mock his mother and father's relationship, i.e. Hashem and Klal Yisrael, and he's angrily stating our case that HaKadosh Baruch Hu still loves us and we still love him, despite the look of things of Israel being downtrodden, being terribly oppressed in exile, etc., etc. Despite all that, don't worry, they still love each other. That's essentially what Shir HaShirim is. That's the main theme, really, of the entire Shir, of the entire Megillah. And what it means is, let him kiss me with the kiss of his mouth. Let us go back to the level, as it were, where he addressed us directly at Har Sinai. For your love is better than wine. And we said that your love is your goodness. And it's better than wine, which is more dear or darling to me than anything in physicality. Wine being a simon of physicality. Now, if I could just... that essentially rolls us all the way up to where we got to from last time. Let's just continue finishing off this Pasuk before we, Be'ezus Hashem, look at Pasuk Gimel. Okay? So, we've done a lot of background data. We did a lot of Midrashim. And now I think we're really fine to wrap up this second verse. When Hashem created Adam Harishon, he gave him a taste of the bliss that he's going to enjoy forever in Olam Haba. He gave him a taste of that. And that's when God will have a closer relationship with man, can only be in Olam Haba. For those that have done Derech Hashem, you'll know from the end of the first section, or even from chapter 3 of section 1, we learn out that there can be no evil in Olam Haba. Evil is one, a mechitza that Hashem has made as a barrier between you and him. a necessary mechitza right now, so we can struggle over it to earn reward. And two, if Hashem would allow evil to pervade into Olam Haba, it would ruin the reward of the righteous that get there. As such, it's double locked out of Olam Haba. There can be no evil in the next world. Now, the next world is this world rebuilt with the evil taken out. It's not Olam HaNeshamos. It's not the soul world, which is where people go when they die. That's not it. It's this world recreated with the evil removed, because God has to reward you in both physical and spiritual commodities, because you, whenever you did a mitzvah, you did a spiritual component and a physical component. And those two things together have to be rewarded in the same way. Otherwise, God will be shortchanging you. If you put on tefillin or you take challah, you need an arm, you need a skull. These are things you need, and therefore you've got to get paid with both spiritual and physical elements. All that can only happen in Olam Haba. Now, Adam Rishon had a foresight of just how amazing, how beautiful, how incredible, how inexplicably incredible Olam Haba will be. It's going to be the ultimate place of pleasure. God is the ultimate pleasure available, and it will be direct access with Him, commensurate to the level that you have earned of that, based upon your deeds in this life here in Olam Hazeh, struggling with evil. And then, once that happens, humanity will become a home for the divine presence and will be able to hear Torah directly from the mouth of God. Kisses from the mouth of God. That's essentially what's going to be there, in unimaginable closeness with the divine. Now, when Adam sinned, his materialism became sullied and his soul blemished. I've dealt with this a lot when we deal with Derech Hashem. For those who have done Derech Hashem, that's a great training ground. Remember, the word beged is bagad, treachery, clothing. Beged is treacherous. Beis gimel dalet are the letters moving away from aleph. The reason why Adam was naked to start with was the clothing of his soul was his body. And the soul was paramount and the body was secondary. So he had a case for his neshama, which is perfectly acceptable. When he decided to sin and make materialism paramount, he's now made the case more important than the neshama, which means the case, the physical body, now needs its own case in the form of clothing. That's why he felt naked and ashamed after he ate of the Eitz Das Tovara, because he's taken that which is not as important, made it more as important, and now needs a clothing or a case, a protective cover, for that which was a protective cover. You can see that all around in our lives today. Sometimes people buy very, very expensive garments and they buy garment coverers to cover their garments, which are really over there to cover their body. You know, what's more important, you know? Very interesting idea. Now, at that time, our close attachment to God ceased once Adam sinned, and it can now only be regained when the body returns to dust. The soul then has to go to Olam HaNeshamos and be purged of its damage. And all the impurities come out of the body by rotting. All the impurities come out of the soul through Gehenim or other spiritual punishments. Then once it's cleaned and recharged, I've got to put those two things back together. Body and soul together for Olam Haba. Absolutely key concept. One of the 13 principles of Jewish faith encoded by the Rambam is you've got to believe in Techiyas HaMasim. Why? Why do I have to believe in the resurrection of the dead? Answer: if you don't accept the concept of the resurrection, that means God can't give a perfect giving. And you're saying God is incapable of doing it. He can't give a perfect good if he just gives to the soul or he just gives to the body. He's got to give to body, soul together, because that's how the money was earned. And we're longing for that time, the kisses of his mouth, we're longing for that time where body and soul are realigned as Adam HaRishon was pre-sin. That's what it means. Now, Chazal bring in the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Mem Vov, that's 146, Amud Aleph, side A, that the people of Israel who were gathered at Har Sinai were purged of all their uncleanliness that had sullied mankind until from Adam until then. And therefore, they were immune from the angel of death. They became immortals at that moment. And God was able to speak to them directly, and they could even hear his voice, which usually would be, if God was speaking to you now, you wouldn't hear it. Because you're not holding to hear such sublime God. They were holding. They were like Adam Lifnei Chet, literally complete repatriation of humanity from the first sin. Absolutely amazing. Everything was fantastic. until they sinned with the golden calf. That didn't take long. Oh no. And once they did that, they returned back down to their state of impurity. And now they're being held under the Melech HaMaveh's control again. They become mortal. And they lost hope that God would kiss them with the kisses of his mouth before the end of days, before Kates, before Zman Mashiach. That's it now. They knew that kind of height of relationship is out of bounds because of their recalcitrance with the golden calf until the Mashiach comes. They got that. They gave their crowns away, their Naaseh V'Nishmeh crowns, their jewelry that they'd been bedecked with, and that had been all been given to Moshe Rabbeinu. They gave them all to him, and he wore them all. But they themselves could not wear them. They realized they're no longer immortal, and they have sullied themselves, much like Adam did in the Garden of Eden. Hence, I long for the time when we go back to the kisses of your mouth, like Har Sinai, or essentially like Olam Haba. Back when we can be in a state where that'll be a fitting, good thing. When two people grow to love each other, they are at first attached emotionally. And physical contact usually only follows later. The people of Israel were cast into a bitter exile by Hashem, yet they requested that he nonetheless kiss them with the kisses of his mouth. They were too embarrassed to ask God outright, so they don't address him directly. They say, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth in third person. I.e. they're kind of reminiscing over what they lost. Really, they want that closeness, but they know they can't even say it directly to the actual focus of the desire. If you have a poor homeless maiden seeking the husband of her youth who rejected her, and this poor homeless maiden is starting to reminisce over what she had, she would sigh to herself, say, would it only be that I could go back to bygone times so that my husband could kiss me? That's how Klal Yisrael feels. She feels as if only I could go back to Har Sinai, if only I could get back to that that immaculate level of closeness. And I realize now that I'm not going to be able to get that until a long and bitter exile has started to cleanse me of this problem. When it says, for your love is better than wine, it doesn't say his love is better than wine. It says your love, first person singular. There, Israel isn't embarrassed to directly address God. It says, I know that your affection has never been withdrawn and you've always loved us. And therefore, I don't lack your love. Your love is better than wine. Your love is better than any form of materialism. Your love I know you've got. But the level of closeness of you speaking to us from your mouth, that I know I don't have. That I know I've forfeited. And that really pains me. That's essentially what's going on there. Now, we've got to talk a little bit about wine. It does definitely say yain, it specifically says wine, which, as we know halachically, is always a byword for all alcoholic beverages and any intoxicating beverage at all, whatever it's intoxicating with. The code word is, like the code word for sustaining food is lechem, or pas, bread. Even though it might not be bread, but the ultimate food which sustains is bread, the ultimate drink which intoxicates is wine. There's lots of intoxicating beverages and brews out there made of cactuses or something like that. Yeah, it's a concept of wine. But wine also means materialism, as I discussed with Rosh Rafael Hirsch last time. When you add wine to a korban versus oil versus flour, flour is sustenance, absolute necessity. Oil is like a luxury, a beautiful thing which really enhances, while wine is an aspirational joy which goes on top of that. Often, if we drink wine, and this is Chazal talking, we tend to get drowsy and fall asleep. And when they wake up, all the effects of the liquor that they drank, whether it was whiskey or wine or beer, whatever it was, has gone. Generally, it has worn off. And the enjoyment they had while they were drinking has also gone. So really, after you've woken up, from being boozed up, all the benefits of the drinking have been expended. And it's like, I never drank to start with. Not so the love of God for his people. It's better than wine, says Klal Yisrael in this pasuk through Shlomo. Israel is saying, when you brought me to Harsinai, which is the vinery of Tyre, the Medrash Shir Hashirim 2:15 calls it the vinery, the place the place where wine is made and processed for Tyre. And you demonstrated your love for us and you found favor for us there, and we found favor for you. It was fantastic. But we know the temple was destroyed because of us. And then, as it were, we've caused you to fall asleep. And we want to awaken you from this slumber, this distance in our relationship. As it says in Tehillim, Mem Dalad, Chof Dalad, 44:24, awaken, why do you sleep? That's addressed directly to God. Kind of like, come back to us. You seem as if you're like really like in slumber versus our relationship. But the sleep hasn't diminished your love for us. Like someone who gets drunk and falls asleep, then wakes up, and all the wine's been metabolized out of the system. This sleep that you're having, this distance that you're having from us, doesn't calm your love down or get rid of the love or metabolize the love out of your system. The love is as strong with you now as it was at Harsinai. Hence, your love is better than wine. It has long-term effects which will last better than alcohol in the bloodstream. And the love Hashem has for us is better than wine, because he keeps adapting him, his voice, his input to us, his relationship with us, based upon the strength of the audience. So God's love is stronger for those that can deal with it, and God's love is softer and weaker for those that will be overcome by such intensity. It's always perfectly meted out. That's why it says the voice of God was heard by each person at Harsinai according to his personal strength. That's very different from wine, by the way. Wine has a little influence on a strong person, but it can cause a weak person to get very, very drunk. If you've got a very strong tolerance for alcohol, you could drink a whole bottle of wine and just get tipsy. If you have no tolerance for alcohol and you drink a whole bottle of wine, you're paralytic, right? God's love for us is much, much better than the effects of alcohol. It is perfectly meted out for the recipients because he loves us so much and because he's perfect. He's not going to do it any other way. He's only going to do it the ultimate way he could give, right? Which is the best way he could do it. Okay, and with that, we finished Pasuk Beis. Let's go to Pasuk Gimel. So this is Aleph Gimel. L'reich shemonecha toivim. The fragrance of your oils, or as translated by Rashi, ointments or balms, is good. So literally, the fragrance of your ointments is good. Shemen turak shemecha. Your name is like flowing oil. Al kain alamois ahevucha. Therefore, the maidens, alamois, love you. Now, alamois is also a name for souls as well. So you could read this, therefore, our souls love you, or therefore, the maidens love you. So let's just get this pasuk basically translated according to Chazal. The fragrance of your ointments is good. And your name is like oil which flows. Because of that, whatever that means, maidens or souls love you. Now that's as cryptic as Kehelet ever got, right? I mean, when we were learning Kehelet, it was like, you know, we didn't understand even what is he talking. This is a what does this mean pasuk. We have to delve again into Chazal. Let's try to find out what exactly is going on. Now this verse, and in fact these next verses coming up, all the pasukim coming up, are Gimel, Dalet, and Hay, are now a discourse between Klal Yisrael, the Umas Ha'olam, the Goyim, the Gentile nations of the earth, and finally in Pasuk Hay, God, who for the first time chimes in as a response to Klal Yisrael, obviously through Shlomo's liturgy, in the way that he's structuring this Megillah. Yeah? So now we've got to start talking about who this is even talking to. If you look at Rashi and the Targum Unklos, they are both of the opinion that the words Shemonecha, your oils, your ointments, refers directly to Nisim v'Niflois, miracles and wonders. That's how they translate this. So really, you should read it, the fragrance, does a miracle have a fragrance? The fragrance of your miracles and wonders is good. That's the first clause. Klal Yisrael is saying that the after effects, the smell of all the miracles and wonders that God's done for us is exceptional. So Klal Yisrael are turning to Hashem, saying, don't consider me insignificant and unworthy of your acceptance of me. Because really, if you check out all the other goyim, all the other nations of the earth, you'll find that I'm the best for you. We're the best shidduch. Definitely, I'm superior to all of them in my relationship to you and in what we can do for each other, basically. So I deem myself worthy of asking for kisses of your mouth, a more direct communication. That's what that term means now from the previous pasuk. You've chosen us, and I know that long term, we are not going to be disgraced. There may be a harsh, bitter exile due to my problems, but long term, it's going to be okay. Now, you've looked between our souls and Egypt's souls before Har Sinai, and you know that what's in their hearts is not fitting to stand at Matan Torah. And they failed to impress you, and even when you drowned them at the sea, it still didn't impress them enough to want Torah. Only Yisrael heard that and thought, wow, I want Torah. Everyone else that heard that was like, yeah, all right, no. Yeah, it doesn't mean I want Torah. I'm impressed, you know, it's an act of power, but it doesn't mean I want to like cleave to this being. No other nation showed interest in God, and no other nation en masse came forward to convert and said, would like to join your ranks. That's despite the fact that by that time, everyone knew of God's greatness, his miracles and his wonders. When the sea split, they went to Bilam and said, what's going on? What should we do? And he's offering the Torah, what's happening? They all asked, you know, what's... Everyone heard about the sea split because the sea split everywhere. It wasn't just the Reed Sea. It was every body of water. It was Loch Ness. It was the Great Lakes in America. It was the lakes in Russia and India. They all split. Why? Because all water was affected. God did a top-down Nes where he changed the nature of water. Yeah? So everyone knew, but no one was like, oh, that's amazing, can I join? No one did that. In fact, there were only two non-Jewish people that did want to join. One was Yisroi, and the other was Rachav, who later married Joshua. And that's because their souls already had some kind of association with Kedusha, and they were deeply drawn to Kedusha, which is something we learn about at Gentile converts, is that their souls are lofty souls of closeness with God, and they desperately yearn for such closeness, but they can't get it, so they find a way in to Klal Yisrael to get that. But again, it was only Yisroi and Rachav were the only two people that we find that converted outside of the era of Rav, who was like Moshe Rabbeinu's Kiruv project. I'm not talking about them because they stood at Har Sinai. People who heard about what was going on, only two people made big efforts to join Klal Yisrael's people. And they're both very important people. The father-in-law of Moses and the wife of Joshua. Really special people. Now, Yaakov and his children are all believers. They have emunah in Hashem. And their sons are believers. So the people of Israel that were standing there were believers, the sons of believers, going all the way back to Yaakov and Yitzhak and Avraham. The fragrance of your ointments is good. The aroma of the miracles and the wonders that you did for a year in Egypt was smelt by the other nations as well. They got a whiff of what you were capable of. And they sensed not only the scent of the 10 plagues and didn't acknowledge you, but even the oil, the ultimate ointment, was the splitting of the Red Sea. And still, that wasn't good enough. It just wasn't good enough. Your name was known only in the higher elements, prior to the Nisim and Neflois in Egypt, the Makkas. But now your name flows like oil into the world through the 10 plagues and the splitting of Yamsuf. Through the splitting of the Red Sea, the Reed Sea, and the 10 plagues, everyone's heard about you. Your name flows like oil, which is very smoothly. Therefore, the maidens, or the souls, Alomois, love you. The reference is to two particular souls, and that's Yisro and Rachav. Therefore, those two souls of Yisro and Rachav particularly love you. No other people apart from those maidens, these two souls of Yisro and Rachav, acknowledged you. They were like, yeah, whatever, there's a God, yeah, but just get on with your own party, do you know what I mean? Yisro and Rachav was like, this is it. This is where we've got to be. And even those two were already somehow, one way or another, they had some kind of affiliation with the Jewish people to start with, one way or another. Their souls were very, very lofty, or they were father-in-law of Moses, for goodness sake, or when the spies went out to check out the land, she was already interfacing with Pinchas and Caleb, and really, really top Jews. She had immediately, save my family and get me involved with you people. Is there any nation who could compare to the people of Israel, a unique nation in the land, in all of planet Earth? Apart from two exceptions of Yisro and Rachav, not a single person or nation came up to you after a year of open miracles in Egypt and then an open miracle planet-wide at the splitting of the sea, which everyone accepted. And then you came to every nation with 22,000 angels and offered them the Torah. It was like, nah, don't fancy it really. Because on Saturday I've got the ballet. Oh, I can't not do that. Can we maybe move that? No? Is it a problem? Oh, don't worry about it. Look, thanks for the offer. Wow! Millions of people rejected him. Amazing. So therefore, come on, you've got to love us. You've got to love us because we not only did we not reject you, we're enamored with you. It's interesting. The more a person uses his strength, the quicker his strength is depleted, right? He becomes sapped of energy. But God performs many, many miracles and wonders, and his abilities are never diminished in the slightest. He doesn't wax and wane, and he doesn't go through eras or cycles of strength. We say Hakel, Hagodol, Hagibor, Vahanoira in the Shemona Esrei, which is praises that Moshe Rabbeinu gave a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Hakel, the Almighty, means that he doesn't need anyone else in order to be able to get anything done. You know, a king may want to invade a country, so he speaks to his chiefs of staff and his generals and gets them to. He can't do it. What can he do? He's just some bloke. Who is he? Really, he's no one. He's only got the power because he has an influence of very powerful people. That's essentially, God doesn't need an army. He'll do it himself. That's Hakel. That's the Almighty. He's Almighty. He doesn't need anyone else. He's Almighty. Hakel, Hagodol. He's great in the fact that real praise, if you think about it, only belongs with him. If you want to praise something, a chair, a power, an energy, fire, matter, gravity, the design of the universe, at the end of the day, the one who really gets the praise is God. Because he made the stuff that whatever it is you're looking at is made with. Hagodol is praise. Hagibor, the strong, means he doesn't go through eras of strength like a mortal king. Sometimes he's very, very influential. Sometimes he's a bit weaker, etc., etc. For Hanoris, he's terrifyingly awesome. He can write the genetic code with ultimate perfection and spin galaxies like a dreidel. So Hagibor is specifically talking about this concept that we're discussing now, that he doesn't change. It isn't as if the nations can turn around and say, yeah, all right, your God's strong now, yeah? But give it 1,000 years and you won't even know about him. He'll probably be in a retirement home somewhere, overtaken by some other god in the pantheon of gods. No, it doesn't work like that. Our God is completely ever strong. He doesn't change. He can't change. He can't go from one state to another because he's perfect. Amazing. It's only us that changes. The fragrance of oil, the miracles and wonders that he wrought, have remained with us all the way from Egypt. Even the goyim have heard about them. They don't even learn about them in school. How do they know? There's 10 plagues, the splitting of the sea. People know about it. They've heard about such a thing. The imprint has been left in humanity. And we're now asking him to repeat those miracles because we know he hasn't grown old or lost any of his powers, chas v'shalom. So we're saying, kiss us with the kisses of your mouth as you did then. Just as oil was poured onto the heads of kings to anoint them, and that oil was never diminished because a nace happened, and the oil, the Shemin Mashiach that Moshe Rabbeinu made together with all those spices has never ever run out. In fact, Mashiach will still be anointed from the same bottle that Moshe Rabbeinu originally concocted. So too, you've also not diminished. Your name's not lacking, certainly with us, in the slightest. Therefore, the maidens, the souls love you, the souls of Klal Yisrael, who are called maidens, reside in the palace of Hashem. And the Egyptians would say, nah, the God that's performed miracles with you has got old. He doesn't like you anymore. He's got a bit weak. Haman was an example of a man who spoke such to Ahasuerus. He said, this God, you know, back in the old days he used to look after them, but today we haven't seen him in ages. He hasn't done any major miracle that we can talk about. And, you know, he's got old. He said that to Ahasuerus. Yeah, he's left, you know. He's weak. He's got weak. You don't have to worry. You can oppress the people. You can do it, you know, without compunction. He can't. If he would have done something, he'd have done it by now. So that they're yours. Do what you want with them. Psh! Look at the difference between us and them, says Klal Yisrael. We acknowledge your greatness. They don't. We understand your nature, as it were. They don't. Gaze down and come back with more oil, with more ointments, with more miracles, with more wonders, and kiss us with the kisses of your mouth. Never leave us again. Come home. That was Pasuk Gimel. Let's look at Pasuk Dalet. Moshcheni achrecha netzura. Draw me in, and I will run after you. The king has brought me into his chambers. That is a huge statement. There's a lot to discuss there. And will be glad and rejoice in you when you bring me into your chambers. It's the bringing me into your chambers that we're very glad about. Nazkicha dadecha meyayin meisharim ahivucha. We will praise your love more than wine. Does that make sense? What does that mean? We'll praise your love more than wine. May Shurim, those who are upright, love you. That's a difficult pasuk. Now notice, very interestingly, Shlomo begins, Moshcheini Achrecha. Draw me in the singular. And then it says, Havi oni hamelech hador v'nismechavo. We'll run in after you, because the king has brought me into... So first of all, he talks in the singular, draw me in. Then it says, we will run after you. And then further on, it says, he has brought me into the chambers. Hamelech hador v'negile v'nismechavo. He's brought me into the chambers. And then it says, we will be glad. Nazkira dodecha meyayin. We will praise your love more than wine. So it keeps flip-flopping between singular and plural. Also, it says, draw me in after you, which is talking to God directly. But then it says, hamelech hadorav negilah v'nismachabach. Then it says, the king, in a very third-person kind of titular way. It's like talking to him as a guy. What about draw me? You should say, it should be consistent. Draw me and we're on after you. You have brought me into your chambers, not his chambers. I will be glad, not we will be glad, and rejoice in you. The whole thing, the syntax of this verse doesn't flow, and it doesn't make sense. will praise your love more than wine. It doesn't make sense. Words don't make sense. To understand this, we have to understand the Mesholim that Shlomo is talking about that have been elucidated by the Al Shech HaKadosh, by the Medrash Rabbah, by the Eitz Yosef. The most important thing to get from this pasuk, which is going to line us up for this and the next pasuk, is there are two elements to Klal Yisrael in exile. Two separate elements. There's the material, physical, bodily element of the Jews, genetically. And there's the spiritual, neshama, eternal, lofty soul element of the Jew as well, both individually and collectively as the overall soul of the Jewish people through time. There's one massive soul which all Jewish souls come out of, and that one massive soul is the soul of Klal Yisrael. And that, as it were, who Hashem has decided he wants to marry, as it were. He wants to have this relationship with her. And the goyim are like, ah, she's useless, and he's probably given up on you anyway, which is why this song was written to say, no, he hasn't. And Klal Yisrael isn't useless. And that, right, essentially, that's what this shir is about. Now, in this particular pasuk, Shlomo first refers to the spiritual soul element, which is the essence which is most closely linked to God anyway. And he says, don't think it strange that I can once again cleave to you to the extent that you will kiss me via the kisses of your mouth, i.e. a Har Sinai-like experience. Both my body and soul will be able to do this. Draw me, the soul in me, close to you, and then we, my soul and my body, will run after you. You hear what he's saying? It's a beautiful concept. So really, there's no way you can get this unless you go into a chazan. Listen to these words. Draw me, we will run after you. Mishocheni, draw my soul close to you. Achrecha Natsura. My soul and my body will come running. Every element of me. You just have to give me a spiritual reason to follow you. And my feet and my shoes will follow you too. All of me will follow you. That's why it flip-flops between singular soul and plural soul and body. The physical element has no cause to protest, claiming that God only drew the soul. Oh, well, he didn't ask me. He says, draw me is only for the neshama. He doesn't care about me. Not at all. Not at all. I'm prepared to follow, but the king has brought me into his chambers at Har Sinai. Now, by the way, remember I said earlier, and the famous Medrash, there were obviously about 15 million people that stood at the foot of Har Sinai. You do the math, in fact, that's a very, very low estimate. So in fact, it's so conservative to be silly. It's got to be much more than 15 million people, but it's got to be at least 15 million people if you do the math. But what about all those people who have as yet to be born and all the converts? They're there as well. But they're only there in spiritual auspices. Their souls were there, but the 15 million people were soul and body. They actually had walked out of Egypt and they had arrived at the Sinai Peninsula, at the foot of Jebel Musa, at the foot of Mount Sinai, and they're there. I've got a rock from Har Sinai here. You can see it. Maybe I should bring it to you. I'll just show it to you now. Give me 1 minute. There's a rock here from Har Sinai. Now remember, Har Sinai was the place where the snare happened, the burning bush. If you look at this rock from Har Sinai, however you crack it or break it, there is a fractal of a darker rock in there which looks like a thorn bush. And in the times of the Rishonim, in the times of the early halachic commentators, they used to take donkeys there with saddlebags and fill up entire bags made of these rocks to give to members of their communities. So they say, look, this is Har Sinai with a thorn bush. Moses saw a thorn bush and it imprinted the rock. And this is one of the rocks. And to give them chizek, they would keep it in their homes during hard times. They go, oh, we still stood at Har Sinai. It's a big thing that we got to Har Sinai. So there was a spiritual mass that was there of people that had as yet not been born, or Gentiles that have as yet not converted. But there was also a physical mass of over 15 million people that were their body and soul together. When you kiss me, i.e. have that level of high-level communication, both my body and my soul will rejoice in you. Every element of who we are only too happy that you have this level of closer to us. The body will be like, I can't take it, I don't want it. We're only too happy. The upright may shorim ahevucha. The upright will love you. What does that mean? But I'm in exile now. And I don't have this level of connection and closeness that I so desire. In fact, that's what exile is. Exile is being pushed away, banished from a level of closeness, is it not? That's the definition of exile, right? So exile means you can't have the kisses of his mouth, this high level, because that's the point of it. That's what exile is meant to do. It's meant to not give you that level of closeness, but you're yearning for it, which is an important thing to do in exile, because that's what you're meant to develop. You're not going to become complacent. You're going to yearn for this level of closeness. Now, there are some righteous people who have cleaved to you, and their souls have entered the chambers of Tyre at Har Sinai. When my body and my soul have been kissed by you, I will cleave to you that much more. I'm intensely desirous to enter your chambers of high-level closeness, a la Har Sinai, so I'm asking you for that level of closeness now. Draw me, says the soul, and we will run, body and soul together. That's so much to say. Even though this process of being drawn to God will take time, if you attract my soul, which is the highest thing I've got, the closest thing to you, by influencing it with your divine spirit, then not only will I, the soul, be drawn to you, but we, the soul and body, will run after you to do your bidding and cleave to you. We won't indulge in the pleasures of life. Wine being a marker of pleasures of life. And just go after material benefits. Wine, as the goyim do. This is what they're focused on. And nor do we even expect any reward for the good deeds that we're doing. The only thing we're after is to run after you alone and not any futile pleasure. Even if it means reward, we just don't care. We just want closeness with you. Nothing else matters. So just say the word and we'll run there. Once the king has brought me into his chambers. Now we've already said to a certain extent that's Har Sinai. But the Medrash says, to where are we being drawn? The Medrash Rabbah asks, Shushim Rabbah, Parsha Aleph, it says, where are we being drawn? What does it mean being drawn into the king chambers? The meaning is, says the Medrash, that God should remember us and bestow good fortune upon us because we follow him blindly. We don't care where we're being led. Notice one of the times that God fell in love with us was when we walked out of Egypt without any food into a wilderness, an unagricultural land with no expectation of food. It's 15 million people. And they're all going, and nobody's asking any question, what are we going to eat? They had such absolute, complete dveikus to Hashem. It didn't matter where he was taking them. He could take us to a horrible desert with dangerous creatures in without any food. We'll go there. In fact, that's where you're taking us. Fine, good for us, let's go. And I was like, wow. That was a wow moment from Hashem's perspective. Look at this. There's a whole human race here that is really following me absolutely diligently, like a shepherd leading his sheep. And the sheep, well, wherever the shepherd says, that doesn't bother me. Wherever he says, I'm going where he says. Nobody else was doing that. No other group of people was willing to do that. Amazing. We're drawn only towards this chamber like Gun Aiden. And we don't, even if you get no recompense at all, we have faith that God will compensate us in Olam Haba, because we know it's trustworthy. We're not questioning the arrangement. We're not looking at the fine print. Okay, exactly how are you going to pay that back? Under what auspices and what investment structure exactly is it that you're using? And how high risk is the, we don't ask. It's fine. Even if you gain nothing in this world at all, because the king has brought me into his chamber where my soul resides prior to being sent to this world and where it'll have to sit awaiting. That's good enough for me. I'm just after closeness. I need this relationship. Like a longing for Gan Eden. Draw me and we will run after you. Draw me and my material body and soul will run after you. And that yearning for that place has remained with me, even though I can't even remember my earlier existence before I was sent to this world. I was an neshama hanging about upstairs in Shemayim before you sent me into a body in this world, and I don't remember anything about that stage of my existence at all. But I'm desperate for it. How can you be desperate? You don't even know what you're on about. It's just a yearning. It's like an animal instinct. And this is really what... It's very interesting. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, Lamed Vav, 36, pasuk Tes, 9, that says, they are satisfied with the abundance of your house. What does that mean? Klal Yisrael are drawn after God like an animal, like a beast, towards Gan Eden, because that's where God hangs out more. That's why it says, the sons of Adam shelter in the shadow of your wings in Tehillim. We are just drawn like a homing pigeon back home. That's just a natural instinct of Klal Yisrael. By the way, Rabbi Zev Lef brings, I think this is the Maharal, as the idea that that's the concept of the Aliyah movement. Jews know that they belong in Eretz Yisrael, like a homing pigeon knows it belongs in a particular nest. There's no rhyme or reason, you just got an urge to go. That's exactly like a homing dove. That's why Klal Yisrael are called a dove. We're called a dove, like a dove mates for life. It's also got instincts, homing instincts. It's a kosher animal, it's got homing instincts. So too, Klal Yisrael is a dove, a yonah. We've got a homing instinct to go home to Eretz Yisrael to be with Hashem. It's just an instinct. You can't help it. It's like an animalistic instinct which you can't undo. In fact, if you don't have it, something's wrong with you. And Klal Yisrael hope to be satisfied with the abundance of your house, which is the area of Olam HaNeshama, known as Gan Eden, which is a place which you're going to be close to Hashem with, awaiting Olam Haba. The ultimate thing is going to be Olam Haba. And we're desperate for this. Desperate. We're yearning for, why? Not because of the place, because of what plants will be there, and what animals will be there. We don't care. We care about the level of closest to Hashem that we'll enjoy there. The kisses of his mouth. That's what essentially we're all after. We're all after that level of kirvat Hashem. We can't stay away. We're like magnets that are just naturally drawn to him. Got 10 minutes. Let's try this for the first. This is an amazing thing. Let's try have a look at Pasuk Hay. Oh, no, actually, this is not Hashem. Hashem doesn't chime in yet. No, just a minute. Just trying to look as no. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't come until Ches, his response. Let's look at Hay. Shachaira ani v'na'ava b'nois Yerushalayim. I am blackened, swarthy, cooked, baked, hardened, yet I am comely, O daughters of Jerusalem. Who's these Benos Yerushalayim? Who are the daughters of Jerusalem? This is Klal Yisrael talking to someone here, saying that I am swarthy, I've been blackened like a pot that's been well used. Ka'ahale Kedar, like the tents of a place called Kedar, Kir Iris Shaloma, like the draperies, and this has to go with Chazal's translation, of the king to whom peace belongs. All that coming out the word Shaloma. The Urios are draperies or tapestries or drapes, like the Urios of the Mishkan. The tabernacle was covered in drapes to make a roof and cover the side walls. So Klal Yisrael is saying, I am blackened, but still I'm beautiful. O daughters of Jerusalem, Banos Yerushalayim, I'm like the tents of Kedar. We've got to talk, what are these tents? Who? Where's Kedar? And what's the tents? And you know what I'm like? I'm like the draperies of the king to whom peace belongs. I'm not like the tents of Kedar, really. I'm more like the draperies of Hashem. Well, who are you talking to? What's this? What's this got to do with anything? Why is this pasuk? What about what we've just been talking about? It's very difficult to understand this, the flow of this grammar. Shlomo is saying, and everything that we've just said about the soul being like a homing pigeon, being running into Hashem and all this business, won't they raise an eyebrow and go, ah, you want a Kodesh Baruch Hu to kiss you with the kisses of his mouth, and you say you're better than every other person and every other nation, and they'd for sure shake their heads, go, no. They go, they'd make that kind of disapproving clucking sound. No. Why are you taking so much pride in yourself? You think you're so nice? Look at you. After the Babylonians only did what to you? Look at what the Greeks have done. Look at what the Romans have done. You're sitting in suffering and you think yourself so beautiful. I'm blackened, but I'm comely with you. Are you? Are you really as good looking as you were? You've suffered in exile throughout history. And you're responding to those who are called the Benos Yerushalayim as a mother would contend with her daughter. The nations are called daughters of Jerusalem because the Medrash Shemais Rabbah Chof Gimel Yud Aleph 23:11 says, La'asid lavoi, in days to come, Yerushalayim will be the capital of planet Earth. Anyone visiting Earth would want to drop into the capital. Anyone on Earth would know HQ is in Jerusalem. So all Goyim are really viewed in the global scheme of things as Benos Yerushalayim, daughters of the Earth's capital. That's quite a universal concept. That's why we find the expression Jericho and its daughters, which means Jericho and its satellite townships. So too, La'asid Lavoi, in days to come, Jerusalem will be the center region of all the world, and all other world cities will be considered satellites, township cities to Jerusalem. Won't be twinned with Jerusalem. There'll be Jerusalem, which will be the main capital. Then there'll be other important cities as well, but they'll all pale into insignificance next to Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. I am black, but I am comely. When you saw how I gave my back to the smiters, as it says in Isaiah 50, didn't they declare my greatness? That I behaved very, very well, despite the fact I'm being abused. I am swarthy and blackened and tanned and affected by my oppression. And I have been subjected to atrocities in my exile. But I still thank Hashem because I am comely. I'm still beautiful. And I delight in the love and company of my own soul, of the soul of Klal Yisrael. Because I know that the soul of Israel is mated for life to God himself. Now God sometimes converses with Klal Yisrael, and all the other nations sometimes overhear what he has to say. And Israel says to them, I know that all those that stood by and watched me being plundered and pillaged in my long exile treated me like dirt and despised me and consider me worthless. What did we learn out in the Medrash Rabbah and Esther? That if a Jew touched a pot of a Persian, it would be so disgusting, they would empty the contents of the pot into a gutter. But if a worm crawled into their pot, they'd just pick it out and eat the food. A Jew touching a pot is worse than a worm falling into into your dinner. That's why Achashverosh was not interested in a Jewish girl. Esther was chosen because of her exceptional beauty. Even the guy were praising her to the gods. It's not even a chapter Yiddish girl. But the idea of marrying a Jewish girl was so repulsive. It was sickening. That's how lowly, despised, and worthless the Jews have been in the eyes of Gentiles. So the nations respond and they ask, if that's the case, how can you address both God and man that there's no nation like you? You really are. I don't know how you have any self-respect, Bichlal. I mean, how do you even stand up? I mean, it's shocking that you think you're even worth something. Israel says, yeah, I'm black. I'm blackened, but I'm comely. I'm downtrodden now, but I'm like the tents of Kedar. Ooh, what are these tents of Kedar, I hear you ask. What's tents of Kedar? Oh, that's a very good question. It's like this. The tents of Kedar were a particular kind of tent in that particular region, which was very, very hot. So they used to cover the outside of their tents with a very black, thick, goopy, I assume like a tar, to act as some kind of barrier against the sun. And they're black on the outside. When the sun beats down on them, however, when you go on the inside, they're protected against the heat, and it's actually quite nice in there. It's quite cool in the actual tents of Kedar. The tents of Kedar have some kind of reflective or kind of insulative covering on the outside, which makes them black, but they're actually cool and calm on the inside of the tent. So Solomon is using these tents of Kedar, which are known about then, as an analogy to say, yeah, I've really taken a bashing on the outside of me, but the inside of me, the core of my soul, the core of my spirituality, is perfectly content. We'll be fine. You may exert an influence over my outside, but not over my inside. That's what it means, the tents of Kedar. I'm like the draperies of the king to whom peace belongs. Israel says, O Benois Yerushalayim, even if it's true that our bodies are comparable to the tents of Kedar, it makes little difference, because really, I'm not those tents, which have no value and are disposed of once they get worn out and they get holes in. But I am like the draperies, the ureis of Hashem, to whom peace belongs, which covered the Mishkan, which covered the tabernacle, and they're brimming with sanctity. They aren't going to be dumped in the bin. In fact, they're buried underneath our bodies and will be used again at the time of Mashiach. I may appear to you black like the tents of Kedar. I get it. But in essence, if you really want to know who I am, I'm intrinsically worth something. I'm like the ureus of the Mishkan. I am like the draperies of the tabernacle. So you may see me as worthless as the tents of Kedar, but I know deep down I'm as worthy as the tenting of the Mishkan itself. So don't you tell me about my worth. I know my worth, says Klal Yisrael to the Goyim. And it's more than you give me credit for. And that takes us through to the end of Pasuk Hay. And the beginning of Pasuk Vav is, don't gaze at me as if I'm swarthy. It's just the sun that's tanned me, because I've borne the brunt of exile. And we'll discuss that Klal Yisrael keep on in this narrative to the Gentiles saying, you've completely misjudged how that you basically, you feel as if that I'm now so worthless, I'm divorced, I'm homeless, I've been dumped as some girlfriend has been dumped. Not at all. I'm a fully fledged wife. I have gone through hardship, but I've not lost my ksuba. And that's what Pasuk Vav is all about. And Be'ez Hashem, we will do that next time. I'm looking forward to you joining us then when we can do Be'ez Hashem Vav, Zayin, and Ches. Ches is really exciting because that's where Hashem comes in and actually starts talking to Klal Yisrael in front of the Goyim, saying, this is how I feel about you, and this is where we're going to go, and this is what I suggest you do if you're ever worried. That's going to be amazing. Be'ez Hashem, we'll continue with that next time, and I look forward to seeing you then. In the meantime, I also wish you a Freilich and Chanukah.